Around the NFL podcast will still be relevant in February.
Hope so. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a room filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Oh, you know, what is more 2020 than, you know, having our holiday spectacular? Dan, you did a great job putting that together. We thank all our great guests. We have all these, like, kind of lovely parting shots and what the whole year is meant to us. And then, like, 12 hours later, here we are taping another show, you know?
Right. That's, I thought you were going to speak of the numerous technical difficulties we'd had with sound on the beginning of that show, which also is another very 2020 moment. So apologies to the listeners for that. That was actually, and before you start adding Ricky and shredding her on the subreddit, that was not on her either. Issues with Colleen's mic. That's just, you know, listen, it's pandemic life. Sometimes things don't go the way we want on the technical side of things. That's life.
Yep. Yeah. And I would say, you know, if we want to look at the whole process, we can lower the cost of these podcasts to the subscribers if they have technical complaints.
Wow, really coming out swinging. I've learned from our government to just, like, if things go wrong, pretend it never happened. I just don't even mention it.
That's another method that works.
And if it does come down to where we need to offer someone up as the sacrificial lamb, why not make it Nabil, our fill-in producer today? Erica, we have a little head start on the holidays. So Nabil filling in. So if you have any issues about the production quality, not just of today's show, which he's directly involved with, but any issues in the past, just head on over to Nabil Corner, wherever that might be.
Yep.
All right.
Or check out his, you know, I think he does some other podcasts. It's like, it's about college football, but it's only around draft time with Mr. Sticky or something like that. I don't even know.
A lower level operation for sure. I'm not sure when it airs.
Welcome to the big leagues, Nabil. All right. Ho, ho, ho. Yes. Merry Christmas. It's week 16. And we're going to go through every game in our preview episode. Bit of a weird week. We have a Christmas night game. We have three Saturday games in addition to Sunday night football and Monday night football. And then the rest of the league is also playing. There are no more bye weeks. There's no more traditional Thursday night football. We are reaching the home stretch of the regular season. And despite there being 32 teams, divide 32 by 2, because that's how many teams play in a game, that gives you 16 games.
So just zero muscle memory. I feel like that you've done that problem 400 to 500 times.
Did I get it right? I think I nailed it. 16 games, but only three matchups this week between teams that both have winning records. Colts at Steelers, Rams at Seahawks, Titans at Packers. All those games are very important to the playoff picture. And speaking of playoff picture, you have an Eagles-Cowboys showdown of two 9-loss teams that has big ramifications in the NFC East, despite it being only week 16. Yes, 2020 is weird. Let's get into it. And we're going to do it draft style once we get rolling today. But we'll start. Let's spin through all those specialty games, Saturday, Christmas. Let's start with Christmas. How about that? Christmas night. I don't know where the players come down on this. I imagine they're not thrilled about playing on Christmas night, but it's also a big spotlight game. So I think there's that too. The Vikings travel to the Superdome to face the New Orleans Saints. And the Vikings essentially kicked away any chance of going to the playoffs with a loss last week. So the schedule gods did not get a favor done for them by the Vikings, who really, this could have been a very interesting game on both sides if the Vikings would have won. But still, you know what? It's football. You get something to watch with the on Christmas night. And the Saints need a win. And Drew Brees needs to play better, Mark.
Yeah, he does. You know, it's I don't put too much on him looking a little rusty, especially early on in his return last week. I think we'll get a little bit better version of Brees. It feels like you can't get Drew Brees and Michael Thomas on the same field this season, and we just really haven't seen that. Also, you throw in Alvin Kamara, the three of them together, which is what you'd expect all year, has just not happened. I would look at this game and say that my one concern a little bit, and I think that the Saints match up really well against The Vikings, and they can run the ball. I mean, Minnesota was just, I thought, waxed by Chicago's ground game, which is a very unusual thing for the Bears to pull off. But the Bears' offensive line played well, and if the Niners can control Minnesota's front the same way, this should just be a blip in the radar. The Saints can't slip up here. They, if anything, like, I just keep peering ahead to this January game where New Orleans is going to have to go on the road to probably Green Bay or some hideous climate, and that feels like the end of the road to me. Even is that cliche? I don't know if that it just seems that happens to the Saints over and over, that if you put them in ugly weather, you know, bye-bye potentially.
The point is, I feel like it's a little cliche in the sense that everyone just says, oh, Drew Brees can't throw anymore, so put him in the cold weather and it's over. But there's more to this Saints team than that, right, Greg? I mean, there's a great defense here and a special running back in Alvin Kamara, and maybe Michael Thomas is back. We don't need to get too far into the future here, but I think writing off this Saints team just because they're not in the Superdome, I think that's premature as well.
Well, and this matchup is a great counterpoint to the Dome only is going to do so much. I mean, we talk revenge games every week. This is a real revenge game. The Vikings have ruined the best era of success in Sean Payton's run in New Orleans in terms of a four straight years. You know, they ended it twice in these playoffs. And so this is a real revenge game. And I think it's huge to get Drew Brees looking good before the playoffs. I thought, he played his best in that Chiefs game at the end. Maybe that was a sign that he's getting some rust off. Maybe it's a sign that you're not going to go too far with what's my man? Little Humphrey.
Little Jordan.
I mean, we got Little Jordan Humphrey. We got Tommy Lee Lewis, the beer man, who's been on and off the Saints roster, was off it for a while and was the practice squad. This is who he's throwing to right now when Traquan Smith got hurt and Michael Thomas is on the IR. It's like you got Juwan Johnson. I'm like, yeah, these are practice squad guys getting called up and are his targets, and he's struggling. So I find that they're end of this Brees era, probably because I've been tracking it very closely, really fascinating. There's really not been much like it, I don't think, in the last 20 years, where we kind of know he's done after this year. They've had this incredible run, not just for 15 years, but the last 4 years that they haven't capitalized. And you could see Sean Payton sort of defending their record earlier this week, getting a little touchy, being like, well, it's not like we have only been one and done. That's not true. And yeah, okay, you won a couple close games against bad teams in the playoffs, but it would be a total disappointment if this team doesn't do some damage. And I still think they can. And I think they match up well against the Vikings. I agree with you. I would lock this up if it had made it in our desert, past the desert test, but it's just on that border. So I can't do it. The Minnesota offensive line is collapsing right now. They're kind of terrible in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and that's where the Saints are really good. So I do think it's one game where the Saints, like big guys up front, just take over.
And one little note, I mean, Justin Jefferson, who has been phenomenal all year, is 132 yards away from breaking the Randy Moss rookie receiving record for that team. And I think it's interesting that last week, I mean, a little narrative Justin Jefferson had to squash was that he was caught audibly basically telling Kirk Cousins
it was awesome
to wake up in the end zone after he totally missed him on a throw. And
he F-bombed him. Like, throw me the ball. Well, Cousins wouldn't let go. I don't want to get too sidetracked. I'm sorry, but I do want to mention a quote Cousins had after the game. I'm sorry, Mark. Where he said he was thinking about all the team's missed opportunities throughout the game while he was backtracking during his 4th-and-1 play. That to me is Kirk Cousins in a nutshell. He was like, as I was running back and the play was getting more and more hopeless, I was thinking of all our missed opportunities. That's not who you want as your quarterback.
Let's move on. All right. So we have the Vikings done, the Saints looking for positioning. Now let's move to the Saturday game, Tampa Bay at Detroit. And, you know, make sense of the Bucs, somebody, because I struggle with it. You watch that game last week, and they were a complete mess in the first half, down 17-0, can't do anything right on either side of the ball. And then they just, you know, turn it on in the second half and go off. in that win. And now they get a Detroit team that's facing all sorts of issues. COVID-19 rears its ugly head again, this time hitting Detroit on its coaching staff with a lot of close contact designations that put a lot of things up in the air for the Lions in week 16. Greg.
What a COVID game this would be Saturday morning. On NFL Network, and like their interim coach isn't there and half their coaching staff. They just fired their special teams coordinator, which was a fun little storyline because he went rogue and called a fake punt that Bevel didn't know about. Like, that would have been a huge story in week four, but now it's like, who cares about this Lions team?
You know, all the players, he apparently is well liked by the guys that work in that special teams unit, but like, you could go on Twitter and defend that guy. But you got to get the guy out of the building if he's the special teams coach deciding to call fake punts. And like, what are you doing, man? Like, you can't do that. And I love the report out there. I think it was the Detroit News that this was a pattern of behavior. What's the guy's name, by the way? I guess we should name him. There's a pattern of behavior, of glory boy behavior by the special teams coach who liked to bring attention to himself, which is something, just a lovely little subplot around that organization, a special teams coach that wants the spotlight on him.
Braden Combs. Maybe they should make him the coach for this week. Hire him back. And so I'm not worried. You know, I'm with you. The Bucs are confounding. We've talked about that. But this is a Lions defense that not only is terrible, but is incredibly injured, too. So that's just, you would assume they could put up like 40 on him.
I just, you know, everyone clung to the Bucs defense as this sort of consistent element. And the one thing is they have been torched through the air. 456 against the Chiefs, 376 against the Rams, 332 against the Falcons. So, you know, they've declined. Do damage against them. It's been a problem. And you know, I this game is just a speed bump probably for them. But, you know, Detroit did some damage last week, I thought, as well. So I don't know. To me, Tampa, I'm with you, Dan, that it's like the offense seems to play about 30 out of 60 minutes. And it's week 16 and we're still saying that. So maybe that's just baked into who they are. But that's concerning to me when you're going to roll into January against teams that are playing four quarters on offense, not two.
They have the highest ceiling and lowest floor, I think, of any playoff team. I could see them playing the NFC title game. I could absolutely see them losing 27-6 in the first round of the playoffs. Like, they're all over the place.
Here's the thing, though, and we should get into some of these playoff projections. If the Bucs win out, they're going to get that 5 seed, which means they get to play the NFC East champion, which is a nice spot.
I could totally see them losing.
And things change because seeds change, you know, depending on lowest seed advancing. But if like seeds held, then they would be at like the 1 seed, which, you know, probably is going to be the Packers. I don't know. That would be a fun matchup, which is another reason why these Saints, by the way, just quickly, should really be trying to win these games and get the 2 seed to stay home longer and to possibly set up a much easier first round match for them than they would if you fall to the 3 seed. Then you get the NFC West loser, which is the Rams or the Seahawks, and that's much tougher.
Yeah, the 2 seed's still very important. You get the home game, and then if somehow the 1 seed gets knocked off, the NFC title game's in your building if you win one.
I would suggest the Saints don't try to win these games. Go completely countercultural and kind of mail these in and see what happens.
All right. I like that. All right, let's see. Buccaneers clinch playoff berth with win in week 16 at Lions, would also clinch playoff berth with Bears loss at Jaguars in week 16. All right, let's move on. San Francisco at Arizona, the middle Saturday game. The 49ers just got waxed by the Cowboys. They are going in the wrong direction. Another losing season for Kyle Shanahan. And they now get a Cardinals team, Mark, that has seemed to gotten its mojo back these last couple of weeks. Kyler Murray played excellent football in week 15, and this sets up well for them to get a much needed win as they make their playoff push.
Yeah, they've got to watch out for the mistakes. They caught fire last week for sure, late in the game, but they also had, you know, 4 fumbles in that game and an interception. DeAndre Hopkins lost the ball at Philly's 9-yard line on the opening drive. It's just these little things about the Cardinals, especially on offense, that I struggle to believe in them as like a deep journey into January. But I think their defense, and we've talked about Hassan Reddick, like they've had guys stepping up week after week on that defense. And you're facing a Niners team that what is a Niners week this season unless you're finding out that Raheem Mostert is back on the injury list. Mullins needs Tommy John surgery potentially. They are just absolutely hammered on the injury front, and I think it's fascinating. And we probably won't see him or anything, but Josh Rosen was signed to the Niners off the Bucs practice squad ahead of this Cardinals game. I kind of would think that if you want to do anything super spicy, you know, throw him in there.
That's where Josh Rosen is at. 3 years after going number 10 overall, he's getting signed off practice squads for injury decimated also rans in week 16.
He's been on that Bucs practice squad all year. And I think another team, not sure if it was the Jags or who it was, tried to sign him early and he wanted to stay because he thought the opportunity was better long term. He just stayed on the Bucs practice. But he might say, entering the mix with Kyle Shanahan going into next season, that's a nice place to be too. CJ Beathard is starting this game at quarterback. There's no Deebo Samuel, as you mentioned. And I'm with you, Dan. I'm impressed that by the Cards the last 2 weeks on both sides. Yeah, they had the turnovers, but they had better rhythm, like a nice mid-range game. Like we saw the passing. We saw some consistent chunks. They got to win, though. If they don't win out, the Bears have the tiebreak over them. And the Bears are only one back. The Bears have the Jags this week. It's pretty tricky. It feels like it's a two-team race, but the Bears have that tiebreak over the Cardinals. So if they slip up either this week or next week against the Rams, which is a much tougher game.
The Bears have Jacksonville, so.
Yeah.
Think about what we've watched this season. Think about what makes more sense for January football. Is it the Arizona Cardinals, the upstart team with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins? Or is it the Chicago Bears?
And it's probably against the Saints. Bears-Saints is a terrible playoff game, I think.
But it
sense. Kyler Murray versus Saints, that's a perfect wild card game.
It's almost like there's a domino yet to fall to make sure this falls the way it should be. You know, maybe at the big chlorine tank on Sunday, for instance. Maybe that gets taken care of. We don't know. Tommy John surgery, named after the former baseball pitcher, that is like an 18-month recovery timetable in baseball. I don't know what it is for a quarterback in the NFL, but that's a terrible setback for Nick Mullins if that is what ends up being the diagnosis. That's a tough situation. And looking at the desert, I see this is a game that is lockable, so I will lock up the Cardinals, who look really good the last 2 weeks, and the 49ers look like they are ready to call it a season. So I lock up the Cards. Final Saturday game, Miami at Las Vegas. Another game. This is now the second spotlight game in week 16 that could have been a lot of fun if just teams took care of business. If the Raiders, when they have first and goal from the 4-yard line last Thursday night, punch that in, they are in live and well in the playoff race in the AFC, and then there's this huge matchup with the Dolphins. But as it turns out, the Raiders are now all but dead, and now the Miami Dolphins, Greg, have a chance to fortify their playoff position against the team that's going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, it's still just as big for Miami because no one's losing in the AFC. You're going to have to get to 11 to make it, and so it's a thin line here for Miami, which is like how they play every week is a thin margin for error. Like whether it's some weird special teams play or they like take advantage of the opposing defense. And you could see that this week, like having a flaw in their run defense, or there's just like a blown coverage they take advantage of, or, you know, it's some sort of crazy long play that doesn't seem repeatable, that they'll do it. Like that's who this team is. It is repeatable because they do it each and every week, and that's why I'm locking up the old Dolphins on the road on Saturday night. Let's lock it.
I like it.
Well, I'm very annoyed because as I texted Nabil before the show, I am also locking up the Dolphins, so that keeps
us. Last time we did this, we both lost.
Oh, this is huge. This is huge. The Dolphins unite in a big spot on Saturday night Mark, one game behind Greg, so that will stay the same. But I could potentially pick up a game on both of you boys heading into Week 17. The Raiders with Marcus Mariota, is it Mariota most likely starting here? Is that what we're hearing?
I think it's probably more likely Carr. On, you know, we're taping this early on Wednesday. On Tuesday, they split work. So if Carr is already splitting, it's weird that it's a split work, but if Carr is taking practice snaps, maybe they're trying to pull the okey-doke. That's very possible that they're faking us out. We've seen that lately, but it sounds like Carr's got a chance.
I mean, even if Carr does start, we don't have no reason to suspect he can finish that game because that did not, he could barely walk when he yanked his groin on Thursday. So there is a decent chance. It would be, I would say, for a Raider season that has gone to hell again for the second time in a row, seeing the way Mariota played last Thursday, I'd like to see more of him if we're going to have to watch the Raiders in primetime. So I'd rather see Marcus Mariota at this point, but, you know, Gruden might have other ideas.
I could argue the same thing. I think that he gave that offense an element that Carr didn't have. So if you get like a 60% mobility reduced version of Carr, that doesn't interest me a whole lot. I just think that one of the other stories here is this Raiders defense has completely fallen apart, and they can say, yeah, they focused on, you know, finally stopping the run against the Chargers after allowing, you know, 400 yards on the ground over the previous 2 weeks. Why did Los Angeles run the ball at all in that game? Every time they went to the skies, they torched Las Vegas so thoroughly that I just think that which team is more disciplined? Which team is coached well in all three phases? And which team looks like a complete car wreck? I feel confident that Miami will take care of business here.
Nicely done. You know, in the defense, we give Kyle Shanahan a pass every year, it seems, over the injury issues the 49ers have. The Raiders were missing four guys on their starting defense.
Well, they have been for weeks, and I get that, but they weren't a great defense even before that.
But they're probably going to be back. I have some hesitation here because of the way the Dolphins play. It'll probably be close in the fourth quarter, and there is some positive news for the Raiders. They're getting back probably this week. Henry Ruggs, Jalen Richard, Cleveland Farrell, Damon Arnett, and Jonathan Abram. I mean, that's a lot of players
like
that we're missing.
Going on the lock angle. But the Raiders are cooked. They'll find a way to lose. If they found a way to lose that game last Thursday, what makes you think Miami, a well-coached team that's gotten it done week after week, is going
to... Well, now I'm starting to get a bit nervous about this, but for now I'm going to hang with this.
Well, switch off of it. I don't like you being on the same pick anyways. It gets boring.
Well, you're on my pick. You're on my pick.
Exactly. You know, there's no... You guys work it out, okay? Right. All right, let's move to the Sunday and Monday primetime games. All right, now we're talking. Now we're talking some football. Tennessee Titans at Green Bay Packers. I don't know. I was going to say Al, Chris, and Michelle, but Al Michaels, unfortunately, came down with the Rona, and that means Mike Tirico has been getting a lot of minutes lately. This is a great game. This is a tremendous game. The Tennessee Titans, and I said it on last Sunday's podcast, I'll say it again, Ryan Tannehill, what he's brought to that organization, it's unbelievable. I looked it up because I knew it wasn't a lot, but I did look it up just to check. And the Miami Dolphins sent Tannehill to the Titans. It was Tannehill and a sixth-round pick, and the Titans sent back a fourth-round pick and a seventh-round pick. That kind of tells you where Tannehill was at that point in his career. And now you look where he is now. He's going to end up this season with close to 40 total touchdowns. And everyone looks at Derrick Henry, and rightfully so, because he's a stud and he might hit 2,000 yards this year. He's having a Hall of Fame type run these last 3 years. But it's amazing what Tannehill has brought to that offense. And now he's up against Greg, Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, who continue to win. They look like they're going to be the number one seed in the NFC. But the last 2 weeks, at least, it hasn't exactly been a dominating a team. This feels like it's going to be a good game.
Yeah, and if they don't win this game, you know, they're going to have to play week 17 to try to get that one seed. I'm excited. And it does make you think about the relationship between Henry and Tannehill. You mentioned the rushing yards that Henry had, I read this week, in the 26 games without Tannehill before he arrived. is 1,500 yards less than what he's got with Tannehill in the games. So he has 3,200 yards in 26 games with Tannehill and like 17 otherwise. So it's a symbiotic relationship. He was disappointed, Tannehill, not to make the Pro Bowl. Was disappointed for him. This is one of those years there won't be alternates. Remember Andy Dalton would make it every year as like the seventh?
The AFC, like an 11-time Pro Bowler.
The AFC deserved four because everyone was pissed Tannehill didn't make it. And then I looked and it's like, okay, do you take Josh Allen, Mahomes, or Watson out? You could take Watson out if you wanted. He certainly has had a better season, I think, than Kyler Murray, but that's an NFC, AFC thing, or even Russell Wilson. That's how good Tannehill's been. And the rushing game, you know, rushing matchup in this one is awesome. I love that they've been using Aaron Jones as a real primary back. They didn't do it all year until the last two games. He's been splitting work. I think they saved him up for December, and now he's getting, you know, 75-80% of the snaps, and that makes them a lot better.
Well, and also, I mean, you look at the Titans, I think more than any other team, when they are on, and we've talked about like the high floor of their offense, they have, you know, broken people by halftime. So I think this game is fascinating because I don't entirely trust either defense. Wouldn't it be amazing if Tennessee could do something to affect or make the Packers uneasy? I just don't trust that to happen. Aaron Rodgers sacked 5 times last week. That's not been the case with that offense. Carolina made him real uncomfortable early, you know, later on in the game. And I don't know if Tennessee can do that. But the Tennessee Titans, when they've been good, to your point, Dan, they've been balanced. It's not just Derrick Henry. Like, they've, a couple of these games when they've been up 35, whatever, at halftime, it's been a split between their air yards and their ground yards. So if they can achieve that, this will be the game of the week. I never trust game of the weeks, though. Something always goes wrong. So I will wait and see.
I mean, if you are somebody that loves points, this is pointing toward shootout. This should be two teams that are going up and down the field. I have no doubts Tennessee is going to move the ball against Mike Pettine's defense. I think they'll be able to run it, and I think they'll be able to throw it and score, you know, 3 or 4 touchdowns at the very least. And then it just becomes an issue. Can the Packers keep up? Well, they have Aaron Rodgers. But, you know, I watched the game last week that the Packers played when they went totally dry in the second half. It did give me some pause. Like, could that happen in a big spot in the season? Or am I just being a little, have I become spoiled by Aaron Rodgers' success this year? And he deserves a benefit of the doubt that that's not going to happen in a game like this, a big spotlight game with big ramifications for both teams.
Big MVP, I think, game. Two for Rodgers. If he had two straight, I mean, I'm sure he'll do well. I guess it's how well, but he needs to light up the Titans. I think on national, you know, these games shouldn't matter more, but they just do. And in the Packers, it should matter more for them. It's not their fault the schedule they've played, but they someone pointed out they have as many wins this season over winning teams as the Jets do.
Right, which was zero a couple weeks ago. So.
The lowest strength of schedule in the league, you know, by a decent amount. The second lowest strength of victory, which is just like the quality of the teams you beat in the league. So, you know, it's a big test. It's a big test for them. The Titans, it feels like, are in big games every other week. They've won plenty. They've lost plenty. But it feels like they've played everyone, especially in the AFC.
Doesn't that point to perception, though? Because there's certain teams, because, you know, if they don't have a win, a signature win over a huge operation.
The Browns you're talking about?
Well, no, but this is every year. It's not just Cleveland. I think Cleveland beat Tennessee and it hushed some of that. But it's like, you've done nothing. You have to keep doing things to prove yourself. The Packers, you're right. Like, up until a couple of weeks, you look at who they've beaten. It's not their fault they've beaten a bunch of cupcakes. I mean, this would be a prove-it game for me. But I believe in them much more than they did last year. I still think you're going to get a lot of shots of Mike Pettine on the sideline with a mask on going crazy.
I think the Titans win. How about that? I say Titans 38-34. What do you guys got?
I took the Packers, but I tried to do what I call on NFL Game Day View, which, by the way, you know, we have a Christmas show. Check it out after the Christmas game this year, after the post game.
Look at you.
If we're going to be taping on Christmas morning, then I at least I'm going to promote it here. So people can.
Why is Greg's hand so animated right now?
So people can watch.
So you're
it.
Saying Game Day View is on immediately following Miami Vegas?
Show. They have the post game show.
Or but then Minnesota, New Orleans.
But then immediately following that. And in that game, I'll do what I call a thread the needle game, which is I'm picking the Packers to win. It's a very small line in the old desert. But even then, I'm picking the Titans to somehow thread that needle. You know what I'm saying?
What is the desert saying?
I think it's three and a half.
I think that it's interesting that you've got Mike Vrabel's former offensive coordinator who knows the Titans well. He's the boy with the beard. He's now, to me, more of a man than a boy. And I think that this game will be very close. I'm going to go Titans too, though. I think Titans 33, Packers 30.
I did take the Packers, yeah.
Where are we with the Titans right now? They're tied atop the AFC South with the Colts. How does the division shake out there? Greg, give me your tabulation.
They are going to be, they could clinch it if they win and the Colts lose. They have the tie break. The Titans do over the Colts. It's probably going
to No matter what, if they finish with the same record, it's the Titans that win the division.
Yeah, that's right. So if the Colts win this week, the Colts would, and the Titans lose, the Colts would take control of the division. And I tried to come up with these scenarios, Dan. Actually, it was really related to the Jets, that the Colts would be resting their starters against the Jaguars in week 17. And actually, there basically is no scenario for that. The Colts are going to very likely have to play to get into the playoffs next week just to make sure. So that's bad news for the Jets.
I mean, Tennessee clinches a playoff berth with a win.
Right. The Titans
or
can't
Miami
clinch
loss
a,
or
a playoff
loss.
Berth with a win, but not the division this week.
We are not looking past this week.
Okay,
Greg, in the tank watch. We are looking squarely at the big chlorine tank in Jacksonville in the showdown between the Jaguars and Bears. All right, there we go. Finally, Monday Night Football, the final primetime game before we get into our draft. It looked good on paper back in August, but not so hot now. The Buffalo Bills, who have already clinched the AFC East, and really, you know, they stand very little chance of catching the Chiefs for the number one seed, but still, win football games. That's good. They go to New England now to face the Patriots, who, of course, were eliminated last week in the loss to the Dolphins. What are you looking for in this one, Mark?
Well, so Stephon Gilmore is out of the picture for New England, and a Patriots defense that was, you know, lashed by the Rams, thoroughly beaten by Miami. I think this defense is broken. So if you're Buffalo, you're the team right now that people are trying to project. Who is it that can challenge the Chiefs? Who could give them a test? I have no problem saying that it's Buffalo in my world, unless you got like a supercharged version of the Titans. And you've got Stephon Diggs playing at ultra high levels. Josh Allen is playing out of his mind. They're clicking. They're playing their best football on both sides of the ball right now. And I don't see why you don't go in and, I thought it was emotional when they came off the plane last week, Buffalo. And this is like cold weather cities do this. Like thousands of fans showed up at the airport because this matters. What the Bills did winning this division, this isn't a team that's going to let down this week. I think an exclamation point of whipping New England would be psychologically valuable to Buffalo. Why not go do it and do it with authority?
Right. Think of how much has changed since the Bills escaped over the Patriots in week 8. It's kind of at a part in the season we forget about that the Bills offense struggled for about a 5 or 6 week stretch. Bill Belichick has had Josh Allen's number. I would say that continued this year, considering the relative seasons these two teams have. That was a game where I remember thinking Cam Newton played as well as Josh Allen, which was, you know, that's maybe the only week all season you could have said that. And the psychological thing between these two teams can't be understated. The Patriots' record against the Bills in the 2010s was the single most dominant record any team has ever had over another team ever. And the Bills in that decade weren't that bad. It just sort of doesn't make sense that the Jets and the Dolphins did much better actually against the Patriots. But they did, and it meant a lot to them last time. I'm sure it would mean a lot now to go in there. There's no reason why the way the Bills are playing right now that they shouldn't really take care of business and that they shouldn't want that 2 seed. Now they're in contention. They'll know when they play this game that the Chiefs have already clinched home field, by the way, Dan, you know, assuming the Chiefs win against the Falcons. But I think the 2 seed should matter for them. I think they're going to want to get it, get as many home games in Buffalo as they can.
same thing that I was saying over in the NFC. It's different this year, obviously, and that's a bummer for the Bills and the Saints. But in the past, you would get that second seed. You'd also have a bye, and then you'd come out of that bye with a home game. And then who knows if the number one seed gets knocked off. Maybe you're hosting a title game in your building. You could still do that, though. That last part is still in play. So getting that second seed still entitles you to the home game, and then potentially still can host the conference title game if you advance that far. So big deal on that. Just kick the Patriots' ass. They're ready to go home. And one note, connected to the fans up there, and that's a great fan base in Western New York that had a great run in the 90s. That was also bittersweet because of the Super Bowl failures and then just an endless run of suffering really from 96 until Sean McDermott came around, that is now finally they've turned the corner. But New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said this week that the Department of Health is working on a plan that would allow people to attend the Buffalo Bills playoff game, rapid test them prior to going to the game, and then contact trace after the game. The move is meant to be a prototype for how such events can be held. Of course, there is a vaccine, in fact, two vaccines that have entered the public domain in limited fashion, but it's not going to be in time to vaccinate large swaths of the population and get people in buildings for the playoffs. Here is a way for the Bills, because I think that's one thing, and it's happening in Cleveland too, where these fan bases that have been waiting and waiting and waiting for these playoff games, and now they finally come, and you either have no one in the building or 10,000 fans or whatever. If there's any way to make it happen in a safe way, I'm for it.
I'm with you. I can't think of a fan base. Well, you mentioned them, but the Bills fan base is one of these groups that win or lose, they were there. There's no fair weather aspect to that. And how about this Brandon Bean, GM Executive of the Year in my book? Starts with the Stephon Diggs thing, but that team has become a power very quickly. And it's not just Sean McDermott.
Greg calls him Brandon Bean Counter, so maybe that will work against
it's mostly players. Sean McDermott, though. As much as you give credit to Bean, I do think McDermott has as much power as any coach in the league, and I think he's a good model. You know, there's a lot of people that think the coach should be the guy who hires the GM, which is what happened here. McDermott, you know, basically hired Bean a year later.
Do think he's a Bean counter. I mean, he's slightly unnecessary.
He's executing. It's like John Schneider. It's very similar to John Schneider in
Canada. Didn't Greg bury a GM pick that you had yesterday as well?
I don't know what's going on with Greg.
Somebody else was a Bean counter. Oh, it was the Di Podesta.
That was just, that was just trying to have some fun.
All right, let's move to the, wait, were you finishing a point there, Greg?
No.
All right, great. Great. Yes, this is, we're a long way away from Doug Whaley, put it that way. And who was the old man that was there before or maybe after Whaley?
Buddy Nix and Chan Gailey were together.
It's like, oh, we have found the key to jumpstarting this franchise. We're going to go get that wide receiver.
Sammy Watkins.
I don't know. I can't remember his name either. Let's just move on. All right. Let's get to the draft.
Oh, boy. I'm not ready for this.
And it turns out, Mark, you have the first overall pick. Now, when we go through the games of the schedule that we kind of dole out and figure out who's going to watch what come Sunday. So you're up first. You have 10 games to choose from. Let it rip.
Okay, I'm going to go with this Rams at Seattle, 4:25 Eastern spot.
Okay.
I mean, it's a fascinating game to me because...
Boo.
What, ouch. You're upset that I've taken this, Greg?
Yeah, ouch. That's the game I wanted badly.
It's the Rams season on the line. And
a lot of tension on the show today.
You know, you never expected the Rams to be in this situation, to have to bounce back from losing to the Jets. In December when, you know, a week or two ago, we're talking about them as this totally balanced operation that has a chance to win playoff games. I still think they do. I mean, someone was going to lose to New York. I felt that way, and it's humiliating. I mean, Sean McVay basically said it entirely. But if you are the Rams, we have got to start to see some consistency out of Jared Goff. And this would be a good spot for that to happen. A team that, they know well, that they can match up well against. I think to me, this is all about Jared Goff, and show me who you are over the next 2 weeks and beyond, because it seems to me every third game you get Jared Goff totally disrupted, and he's not a game manager. He's turning the ball over. You can't do that. You can't call him a game manager even at his lowest. So,
do we put that loss again? I know he didn't play out of his mind, but do we put the loss to the Jets on Jared Goff? That felt like a team-wide meltdown, including on that defense. I am putting it on him
to some large degree, because
all right, it's, I mean, because he wasn't on the field when Frank Gore ran for 8 yards on that first carry to close out the game, and then caught the pass. Also, it's like you gotta step up defense and make that play, get the ball back there.
It's not just on Jared Goff, obviously, but I mean, the Dolphins game. I can point to a couple other losses.
That Dolphins game haunts you like it haunts my daughter, Ella.
It changed my impression of them, and they're not a different team. They're the team that every third week has that loss.
Well,
how do you go from whipping the Patriots the way you did to falling to the New York Jets? Something is going on. You're not a consistent team.
Well, it's not the Patriots that it used to be. I mean,
right.
No, but the Patriots were coming off a week where they won 45-0 over the Chargers. So they're a weird team, no doubt.
To your point, Mark, I've never been more worried about Jared Goff in his future and just like where he is than I am right now. Because I think that Patriots game is maybe the perfect example why. Because they didn't really trust him in that game. And they were coaching around him, even with a lead. Like, because he didn't look right early in that game either, by the way. I thought he might have played worse against the Patriots than he did against the Jets. And so when you're starting to coach around your guy in a game that you're winning a little comfortably, and I am concerned. I don't think it's all about Goff, though, because I think about this first matchup between these two teams. I think about the fact that McVay's 5-2 against Carroll. To me, that's significant. Considering where these two teams have been at relatively even over the last 3 years, that one team's won 5 out of 7, that's significant. And I think about that game, Goff didn't play that great in that game either. And their defense just shut down the Seahawks. And are the Seahawks and their offense good enough right now to put up a lot of points? It wouldn't surprise me at all. I'm picking the Rams in this game. Wouldn't surprise me at all if this is a defensive battle that McVay is a little bit better in situational football and the Rams can go out there and win a relatively defensive game.
Yeah, I don't think we're on different pages on this podcast with Jared Goff. I'm very much also in the camp that Jared Goff is Jared Goff. I mean, he's not going to be this like superstar guy. There's going to be peaks and valleys, and maybe down the line, the Rams are going to decide we need to do something about this. But for in the here and now, he's their guy. And he's going to be throw in the stinker every once in a while. And, you know, we talk about it, and Troy Aikman says it a lot. The NFL is a week-to-week league. And I almost put nothing into that Jets loss when I look ahead to this game, because I think the Rams are going to be hyper-competitive in this game. They've already beaten the Seahawks once. And then I look at, like, what the Seahawks have done this season, and they've been an up-and-down team. Their defense has gotten much better. There's no doubt about that, how much this defense has improved in Seattle over the last, let's say, 5 or 6 weeks. It went from being a historically awful group to now they're winning games occasionally because of their defense, and every week their defense is giving them a chance to win. I'm a little curious about what's going to happen with this offense. So is the let Russ cook era, is it already over? Like, was that? Because that was a lot of fun. Like, don't get me wrong. I get why the Seahawks are now maybe going back to their roots a little bit, and they're, you know, playing better on that defensive side of the ball, and they're running the ball, and Russell Wilson is doing his thing on occasion. That's not as fun, though, as what was going on earlier this year where they were just involved with shootouts and it was just all these wild games. I want to see the Seattle offense getting back to where it was earlier this season. And I think they're going to need to be better than they've been the last couple of weeks to handle the Rams, even a Rams team coming off that awful loss.
I mean, some of the issues, I think, for Seattle, because they're 16th in passing since week 9, was offensive line related to some degree. I mean, they had some problems there. They, you know, the Giants put it on Russell Wilson in a way we hadn't seen, and they just haven't really been the same since that game. Both of these teams seem vulnerable to me, because if you get in Goff's face, this team's done. And so it does come down to your quarterback. I mean, this is the first overall pick, and no one has trust that he can take him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I don't.
He's not. I mean, Yeah, we're talking in circles on this because we all agree with that. I think everybody sees that.
I think any one of the top five.
Well, then you got a big problem.
Yeah, I agree. Unless he turns. I think this has been his most disappointing season. I really do, more than last year. But I think any one of the top five teams in the NFC could make the Super Bowl, and I definitely put the Rams into that. I don't think there's a huge gap. This is a great example of how teams change. Dan, you put it very well with the Seahawks. Like, teams in December are very often not the teams we saw in September. It's a big game. If the Seahawks win, they win the division. If the Rams win, then they control their fate and can go win the division in week 17.
And Cam Akers, who had 171 yards against the Patriots, then has a high ankle sprain against the Jets. He's not playing in this game. He's at least missing week 16. So that hurts their offense as well. And finally, just a little bit of housekeeping here. So with a win here, the Seahawks would clinch the NFC West. If the Rams win each of their last two games, they clinch the NFC West. The Rams clinch a playoff berth this week if they win, and then the Bears lose or the Cardinals win. So a lot on the line in that game. All right. Up next in the draft, Greg.
I really wanted that Rams game. Feels like that's the biggest game left. Maybe
you're going to watch it. Don't worry. And you can talk about it on Sunday.
There's a bunch of games. I'm just saying.
We can top trade.
That might be the biggest game left on this regular season schedule, just because it kind of decides the division.
Just move on, Greg. You can get past it. I know you can.
Well, you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to take my Tony Romo game. It's Steelers-Colts. So nothing wrong with that. You get
other than having to watch the Pittsburgh offense for 3.5 hours.
I don't mind. You know, I find it.
You love it. I love Big Ben going down in flames more than anyone in this country.
That's so not true. I swear, if you went and listened to this podcast, I was the biggest supporter of how good this guy was. But you're right. If a team like the Steelers is going to go down, I want them to go down hard. I want to go down in flames, in shame, in infamy, being an 11-0 team that loses six straight. And then they're like, wait, do we even bring back Big Ben? That would be kind of fun. And I've enjoyed watching this Colts team who I picked to win the Super Bowl. Hey, it's still on the line here. They're 10-4. Not bad. How about that matchup? You got DeForest Buckner's back. Autry played well last week. Kamiko Touré, who had been out for a lot of this year. So there's three guys who all missed a bunch of time who are all good pass rushers against the Steelers O-line, which I think is at the center of their struggles, because Ben in that running game behind a bad O-line has no chance. And so this is a tough matchup for them. I really believe it.
They lack total balance. Their line has been injury prone and a mess. And I mean, the Colts, though, who you talk about teams changing, and we pointed to their defense, you know, all season long as the stronghold. They have been torched a couple times in the past month. And, you know, I do, Greg, I think you mentioned DeForest Buckner coming back and playing last week, and he won Defensive Player of the Week. And it was probably one of the most courageous defensive performances you'll get all season, because essentially no one thought he'd play, and he came in and completely had a huge impact. The Colts, to me, they are imperfect, but you're getting the better version of the offense and Aaron Rodgers, and they are running the ball, which Pittsburgh is not doing. I'm with you. The crash and burn nature of the Steelers is fascinating. And I don't say that I don't say that as a Browns supporter, but it's just so interesting where we were 3 weeks ago.
Be honest with the audience and us, Mark. You like it. It's okay.
If you think I'm sitting around like rooting against the Steelers, the Cleveland has to take care of their own business. But to watch what's happened over the last 3 weeks.
Wait, but of course you're rooting against the Steelers. You could win the division as a Cleveland Browns fan. You need them to lose this game.
Right. I'm not. But I guess that's not really where I'm coming from, is like just sitting around like excited that they stink right now. It's incredible where they were a month ago and to this point. And it's like you almost want to draw them in the playoffs. It's not something you'd say about a team that's, you know, days away from maybe having their 12th win.
Well, let's see what happens here, because I agree with you totally on that. If you take what you've seen from the Steelers really since that stupid Ravens COVID game on the Wednesday or Thursday or wherever the hell it was, they have just not been the same team. And it becomes now two questions to me when I look at the Steelers. A, how much is Big Ben responsible for the offense's complete collapse here, whether it's because of their game plan, which was exposed, and the game plan is the way it is because they don't believe Ben has that ability anymore to go up and down the field beyond the short routes? And B, how much do you believe in Mike Tomlin to see his team out of this funk? Because we've seen it before. I mean, in all different sports and certainly in the NFL as well, a really good team is cruising along and then they hit a really deep valley and you just write them off essentially. And then all of a sudden, oh, they have a good week. And then they have another good week. And then we see that, oh, that was just kind of the ebbs and flows of a season. Is that what's going to happen? I kind of think that's the more likely scenario here, rather than Pittsburgh completely imploding and going down in flames and finishing 11-5 or whatever. Like, that's what I see is the more likely scenario. But at the same time, that is more just gut more than anything else, because there's nothing we've seen from them. And I'm focused almost entirely on the offense. I know the defense hasn't been quite as good and the injuries have played a role there as well, but it's the offense. There's nothing that we've seen to tell us that they're about to snap out of the funk, and the Colts are a tough assignment.
Well, the Colts are a big play defense. They will give up plays. They remind me a little bit of the Tony Dungy Colts defenses, and they play a similar style. Like the closest thing teams play to a Tampa 2, which is that they're going to give up yards, but they make big plays. They're plus 12 in turnover margin. That is number one in the NFL. And so they tend to force a lot of turnovers. That's like hard to count on, but you're going up against the Steelers offense that makes no big plays. So I like that matchup for the Colts. I like them to win.
Yeah, I think the Steelers have just become easier for defensive coordinators to prepare for, which is not what you want to be in December. I mean, that Colts defense also allowed, Deshaun Watson is Deshaun Watson, but playing with non-household names, to say it nicely, at wide receiver, they tore right through them. So they're going to need some big plays because
they're not a shutdown
defense from October.
They're not a shutdown defense, but they always find a way to end up making some, like one of their great players makes a great play and then it shuts it down.
I mean, they are so fortunate to still be in this division race in the AFC South. I mean, two of the last 3 weeks, they've needed a miracle fumble at their own goal line against the same Houston team. And in both situations, there was a fumble they needed, and credit goes to Darius Leonard for the most recent one. But the ball needed to bounce the way it had to bounce, and they had to fall on that fumble. It happened twice, and they get two wins directly off it. That says a little something to me as well, that maybe the Colts aren't quite as good as their record indicates. But I don't know. You know what? I'm picking the Steelers this week. I don't know why. I'm probably going to look bad because Big Ben will throw for negative 14 yards. But I like the Steelers bouncing back here.
No, you're so right, though, because 2 weeks from now we could be like, oh, the Steelers are back, blah, blah, blah. It's like these are just ebbs and flows.
Maybe, unless it's an epic collapse. We don't know. We'll find out. All right, third pick. You guys bang me in the biggest of all spots. There's not a lot of great games this week. As I said, there's only three games with two teams with winning records, and they're now all off the board. So logically, I have to find the one that has the most playoff implications packed in for both teams, and it's Philadelphia at Dallas in a game. Greg, you could tell me if it's a lose-or-go-home match for either team.
Both? It is.
For both,
it is.
Okay.
It's a true elimination game, I believe.
So that, I mean, if I'm going to have to watch two losing football teams, let it be a loser goes home match. And I also get to see Jalen Hurts, of course, now, who very quickly was announced as a starter for week 16 by Doug Peterson. And he's coming off a really impressive.
Why did he need to announce that? That
I don't know. I think he was probably asked it and he said, yes, he will be the starter. That would be my guess. I didn't watch the press conference, but he'll be fun to watch. I say this more. It's not a negative or a knock on Jalen Hurts at all, but it just seems like this is less shocking now than it used to be. Like Jalen Hurts, like coming in his second career start and having 400 total yards and four touchdowns, that would be unheard of from a rookie quarterback even 5 years ago. But now I feel like we see it. We saw it multiple times this year. Justin Herbert did it as well. And we saw Kyler Murray hit the ground running and Patrick Mahomes, of course. Like this stuff happens fairly regularly. Now it's Hurts' turn, and that's great for the Eagles and the Cowboys. I get into trouble sometimes. I don't know. I think it's just because I'm a populist at heart, and I like when the Cowboys are good. It seems to be kind of fun to me. So I always end up doing things like picking them to make the playoffs or picking them to win on Thanksgiving, and then they always lose. So I refuse to fall down that trap yet again. I'm going to say the Eagles win this game, but the Cowboys looked better last week against San Francisco. I'll give them that.
You are a populist. I think that's a that's a good designation. Yes. And there's a lot of good qualities that come with that. I'm not one, and I can get into weird places for not being one. I will say this: it's one thing to come in and perform statistically well, and I think quarterbacks are just much better prepared coming out of college than they ever have been. Hurts has been through he went through a lot in college too, and he's pretty mentally tough from people around him that know him. I just thought he brought life to this offense. He was banged up, but Zach Ertz was a non-story all year long, or a frustrating story. But little guys like Greg Ward and Quez Watkins, who, when you have a good, productive quarterback in there, it brings life to all this. Miles Sanders is playing well. Everything is more, hard to plan against with the Eagles now. And you've got a quarterback that can run. It opens up the ground game. And it's just like what could have been, and we've already discussed it. But I think it's no small feat what he's pulling off as a rookie. But you're right, Dan, that it's in 1988. This would have people would have been left paralyzed by the side of the road.
Or 2018. I mean, it's a fairly new phenomenon here.
Right? Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It feels like much more it's crazy, but the way he's done it has really impressed me, because he's a better thrower than I think he was expected to be this early in his career. That he had a touchdown where he had that sprint left and had to set his feet and threw it to Greg Ward. That was a great throw. He had a couple really nice go balls to Alshon Jeffrey, who, by the way, there was all that talk about he didn't get along with Carson Wentz, couldn't get anything done with Carson Wentz.
He's back.
I couldn't help but noticing when Hurts had that rushing touchdown, you could hear Hurts himself screaming as he's going into the end zone in this empty stadium, just being like, and then all the teammates like running up to him and going, I don't know. I love that stuff. I think that stuff matters. And he seems to have a lot of that. Without getting too deep into like the intangibles, that was the reason why DJ really loved Hurts. Daniel Jeremiah, your nemesis, Dan, going into the draft was the intangible stuff.
And I think
you can't see that.
You might be more in a more defined feud with DJ than me.
Okay. Bingo.
When you look at what's happening on Twitter, some of the just mean-spirited barbs back and forth.
There's no mean spirit.
I'll pull back the curtain a little bit. Sometimes now, and this is one of my favorite little developments, when Move the Sticks drops a zinger on you that he really is excited about, he will actually call me on the phone, not text me. He'll call me and say, hey, check out what I just posted. Like, that's how excited he gets.
He's a big comes after you. He's an old school, phone user, which I respect. There's not enough of those out there.
You're burying the lead a little bit, though. He's so excited to zing you that he's got to pick up the phone.
You get under his skin, I wonder, Greg, for some reason. I wonder what's
I don't think
there.
So. I think the thing we like is that neither of us get under each other's skin at all, and it's someone that we can actually go full on like we want to, and we know neither one is going to take it personally.
That's all Greg has ever wanted. He's like, I'm so edgy with my personality and my sense of humor that people
it's
get offended
not edgy,
all the time.
It's not edgy. But
finally, I found someone who could take a joke.
He appreciates it when you come hard. You're right.
All right. Where were we? Okay, there we go. Hurts.
This Cowboys team's a fluke, by the way.
Pollard.
Plus 7 the last 2 weeks in turnover margin against two teams falling apart. That's not sustainable. I love the Eagles pass rush to make Andy Dalton a little scrambled.
One little mini Cowboys note that could affect them going forward. Kellen Moore is being whispered about to take over Boise State's head coaching role. That would take away their OC.
All right. And Tony Pollard, we'll see. Zeke Elliott, calf injury. As we record this, there's a lot of unknowns about that. But regardless of if Ezekiel Elliott's on the field, Tony Pollard deserves a bigger role in that offense. And you wonder what Zeke, I know right now it's Zeke Elliott hit season, just like it's Carson Wentz hit season. Some guys seem to attract criticism more. Is really Zeke Elliott that bad? Because everyone seems to be getting in line to say how terrible
I think
Zeke
not been healthy, but he's not been himself. And their offensive line has been a mess. And I thought Pollard last week brought some energy to that offense. And he's always he's done that in little bits, but I think it's the Zeke Elliott contract that attracts a lot of,
I think he was that bad this season. I think he was that bad this season. There's no argument that he was a top 20 running back, which is,
do they have an out?
You don't expect that. He'll be on the team next year. I did check this out. He has tons of guaranteed money. And I wouldn't give up on him because of one bad year, but he came in and it wasn't right, and it came out and it wasn't right.
There you go. All right. By the way, circling back to Ben Roethlisberger a second, his PFF grade this past week was 25.1 points, the lowest by any starting quarterback this season. And it's the lowest grade in a single game since PFF began assigning player grades in 2006.
Wow.
His PFF grade was retire.
And there was also, and I don't care about this stuff, but I think we could all relate to it because everyone plays fantasy, except for you, Greg, of course. You've graduated way.
It's not true.
Field Yates of ESPN posted a screen grab of somebody's this last week was the semifinals for fantasy leagues across the country and world. And he screenshotted a match or a game that had a guy that had Eric Ebron and Juju and a 1.5 lead going into Monday night. And Ebron gets injured, no catches, he's out. Juju does nothing, loses a fumble for negative points. The guy had the lead and two players going on Monday night and lost a semifinal matchup. Now that is,
I would just,
if there's a worst
it.
Beat in the history of fantasy football, I don't know if there's ever happened.
Couldn't you just bench those players?
Yes, and you could have, but I'll ask Greg this as the fantasy expert built Roto-World brick by brick. Do you leave those guys in to account for potential scoring changes to protect yourself? Because that could happen. Your defense gets a sack taken away, blah, blah, blah. An incompletion.
Wouldn't you know by Monday morning, though?
I've seen it happen. What do? You leave them in or you take them out, Greg? What's the lesson to learn here, oh, holy one?
I don't know. I would leave them in. You got two of them? I don't know about the scoring change thing, though. It seems crazy.
I mean, you're not expecting to, you know, keep players on an offense to produce negative points over the course of an entire game. This person,
plus, you might not have the flexibility. You might not have the flexibility because you got to play someone, and I don't know. And it might be too late to lock out the, I don't know.
All right, good. All right, let's move on. It's snakes to me. And yes, I need to have eyes on this game. The Jacksonville Jaguars, after getting blown out by the Ravens in week 15, coupled with the New York Jets improbably defeating the Los Angeles Rams, are now in the driver's seat for the first overall pick in the draft. But it doesn't mean that's the way it's going to stay. There's a 75% probability, I believe the number is. It's 75, give or take a point or two, that the Jacksonville Jaguars now pick first in the draft. Obviously, as a Jets fan, I want that first overall pick, whether you know Trevor Lawrence is there or just the leverage that comes with pick one. So this is, to me, the big chance. This is the big hope with a trip to Indy in week 17 for Jacksonville. I got to get this win right here against the Bears. The problem is the Bears, boys, are playing a lot better the last 2 weeks. They beat the Texans 36-7. They beat the Vikings 33-27 in an elimination game for both teams. So the 7-7 Bears are playing better, especially on offense. Do we expect it to continue to against arguably the league's worst defense? I mean, I would think you do.
I would too. No, Mitch, you know, has played well. And I think the commonality between him and Montgomery playing well over the last month is the opponents. Montgomery's played the list of the worst rush defenses in the league. He's running really well. They're making it work. And Trubisky's barely been touched during this little stretch. And you would expect the same to continue against this Jaguars team who can't stop the run, who can't really rush the passer, and where they're not even announcing who's the starter. They're splitting reps between Minshew and Mike Glennon, Doug Marrone said on Wednesday. What is that accomplishing, splitting reps? That seems actively trying to mess up both of them.
Well, and Marrone said, there's a competition here. I mean, this is unnecessary subterfuge.
They've been on the same team since August. You're still deciding?
It's totally unnecessary. I mean, I would just say you follow the script that Baltimore did last week and others have against Jacksonville. Jacksonville trailed in yardage 221 yards to 61 at halftime against Baltimore. Chicago's offensive line, which was a hot mess a month ago, has been playing really well. I thought they battered Minnesota's defensive line last week. That's part of the picture with David Montgomery. Our friend Cynthia Freeland has the Bears with a 33.3% chance to make the playoffs based on her her computer and her computer studies. And so they have something to play. I think that's the biggest issue here for you, Dan, that it, had Chicago's script gone the way that we thought it would, where at this point you're talking about new coach, new quarterback, new everything. Instead, they have incredible life, and they're this, you're right, they're this team that could wind up playing the Saints in the playoffs. We're not rooting for that necessarily, but Jacksonville's got nothing to play for.
Yeah, it is. How stunning that things have somehow broken against the Jets in every way possible here, because like Greg said earlier, week 17 doesn't look like it's going to work out either with the Colts needing that win. But, you know, my only hope, and call it blind faith, is that it's still Mitch Trubisky. And I, you know, and even though he's played a lot better these last 2 weeks, he's also had a boneheaded mistake or two in each game.
Yep.
And Jacksonville, you know, last week notwithstanding, which was a bloodbath against the Ravens team that is as hot as anybody in football, they have been playing teams tight. And I just hope it is Gardner Minshew. If it's not Gardner Minshew, I think it tells me if there's really two doors there. If it's not Minshew, if it's Mike Glennon, because obviously we know Mike Glennon is not good. I don't think Gardner Minshew is good either, but I think he gives them a better chance. Doug Marrone either really doesn't like Gardner Minshew and doesn't like his game. Maybe doesn't like his personality. Maybe there's something behind the scenes there, or this is coming from higher up. And this is just, Marrone going through the motions, and then he's going to start Glennon because the owner told him to. Right. I think Shad Khan could have his fingers all over this now. That's the only thing I think. And that would be, I think, the more likely scenario here. And if that's what's happening, is that something the league is okay with? I guess so. I guess ultimately it's Shad Khan's team. So if he could be the head coach if he wanted to.
You could try to argue that either quarterback would be better than the other. It's not like you're sitting Fran Tarkenton here or something with Minshew not right. starting potentially. If you're Shad Khan, part of me is like, look, you're running a business and you've had a faceless organization outside of their little Saxonville playoff surge a couple of years ago. If you're thinking that you are 120 minutes away from drafting Trevor Lawrence, I would start a defensive tackle at quarterback. I don't care. Stop messing around here. But the problem is Marrone says, I don't know if I believe a word of it, that no one's, you know, got to him with these orders. I just don't know what's really being said behind.
Also, Marrone, maybe, listen, we can't speculate too much here, but maybe Marrone still thinks he has a chance to keep this job. So if he is getting a little pressure from upstairs, he's more likely to go along with
it. Be part of the plan.
Well, yeah, as opposed to going against it and being a sure goner if it came to that, probably even get fired before this game. So there's a lot cooking behind the scenes here. I do think just if I can get, as a Jets fan, if I can get Minshew on the field, at least he has a little bit of juice and maybe he could spark the team and the fans get excited there and maybe something happens. I don't like the idea of Mike Glennon saving the Jets' ass here. I just don't.
Well, here's your problem, though.
Oh, I got problems, Rosenthal. I got a lot of problems.
I think the Jets are more likely to win a game the way they're, you know, that they could spring up and win another game, whether it was against the Browns, as likely, but against the Patriots, certainly possible. And you always hear coaches don't tank. And right. I direct you to 2014 halftime, Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning by 13 points or 17 points against the Saints. And Lovie Smith coaching his last game for the Bucs. I don't know why he was helping them out. Benched all of his best players. And they say that tanking doesn't happen in the NFL. Well, he took out Mike Evans. He took out all his best players. And the Saints backups, I believe, they were also resting, came back and won that game and delivered them Jameis Winston. Now, that ended up not being the smartest move either. But that is tanking. It happened. And it happened like Marrone with a coach going out the door anyway. So it can happen.
And it happened because Lovie Smith was behind it, who now just got his ass fired by the University of Illinois. So whatever. Don't do that. Let's keep some integrity in our league.
That was shameful, and I feel like it's a forgotten moment in recent NFL.
All right, let's keep moving. We got to pick up the pace here. Yes. Greg, you're up.
Yeah, let's crank through these last ones and get on our way. What do I need? A late game? But I really want to watch the Rams game. So my strategy here is take the worst late game. I'm going Broncos Chargers. which are two bad teams that I've enjoyed watching all year. So this is a good bad game where one of them is very likely to just blow it at the end in some painful way. That's how the first game went. The Broncos won that game. I just want to give a shout out to Austin Eckler, who has been playing at about 60%. He's like my height and is this, you know, a little taller than me and is the strongest human, I think, in the NFL, because he's so banged up and they're still giving him 25 touches a week and he's still getting it done for your fantasy teams,
like an
by
ant.
The way.
You know how they say ants can carry like 7 million times their weight. That's Austin Eckler.
He's
Ant-Man. Great nickname.
He's a baller because you see him in the open field and he's nowhere near what he should be. And he's still just like carrying the ball amazingly for this team. So what a player, Austin.
He also, when he was on our show last summer in his little office in his home or condo, had in neon lights his logo behind him, which, you know, right, just seemed like nice move, nice little flex there.
Like that. Like he understands the concept of branding. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been an interesting offense since he come back. I just watching Herbert throw against the Raiders, and it's the intermediate and deep throws and just the connection and how potent they were. I don't see how you keep it going against the Broncos. You know, John Elway came out and supported Drew Lock this week, said that when he's down, though, it's because the whole offense is sort of down together. But this to me feels like, you know, I know we want to rush through these, but this feels like a good Carson Wentz landing spot to me. Bring in, if they don't get serious about bringing in competition or trading for someone or bringing someone else in, I can't take this team seriously. I think they're at the edge of losing chunks of the fan base if they don't have a clear-eyed view of what's happening here at quarterback.
That's a good fan base. Like, Cleveland didn't lose fans. I don't think Denver's going to lose fans either. Oh, that's one of the good ones.
It's a great fan base, but I think that they're not milquetoast. They're
John
very
Elway
agitated.
Might lose them. John Elway might lose them. I don't think
probably
the Broncos organization. I don't. It doesn't matter. But I like your take there. Carson Wentz wearing a Broncos uniform. I can envision that. I certainly can. All right, let's move forward, Mark.
All right, I'm going to go Cleveland Jets.
Okay.
I mean, that's just, you know, I'm not going to let that sit out there for another 34 weeks. I would say as a Browns fan, and, you know, this is just deep psychology, it was extremely, there was incredible relief watching the Rams fall to the Jets, because I don't like the idea of having to play an 0-13 or 0-14 team. That sounds like a nightmare to me. I thought the Jets like kind of showed you, to Greg's point, that they're not just going to take a total nap here. This is now Quentin Williams is not, he is out for the season, had a concussion. He had a neck injury. He's on IR. I think that's a big loss for New York. And this is just, it's huge loss, because I think he could have had an impact in this game. We haven't seen too many people put heat on Baker Mayfield of late. I mean, his numbers are off the charts. He's playing real comfortable, and I don't think the Jets are the team to do it. But if you're Cleveland, it kind of reminds me of the Giants game a little bit. These are games you need to win. It starts with your ground game. It starts with your offensive line. Let's not get too tricky here. Their defense does just enough. But the one thing I saw in that game, though, and Chris Collinsworth pointed it out in the Giants game, Myles Garrett is not himself right now. Now, that may be fine this week, but in general, he's talked openly about, and this is, you don't hear a lot of these stories, the corona absolutely has impacted his ability to breathe, to deep breathe when playing. And he looked totally gassed during parts of that Giants game. So that's a factor. He's their shining hope on defense. In this game, you just got to do enough to get out of town.
They will, I think. Yeah, the Browns are way better than both the Giants and Jets, but they've definitely caught some breaks here with the injury situations for both teams. And I think Quinnen Williams, you know, he was going punch for punch with Aaron Donald last week. And it's unfortunate. I hated hearing that neck injury. Anytime you hear neck injury, I hope that's nothing that could be serious, because careers end over neck injuries, and that's the last thing the Jets need. I don't expect anything like what we saw last week. This seems well set up for the Browns to romp a team that's playing really well, is taking care of business all year, against a Jet team that got their win and now just lost their best player. This feels like a romp to me, and that's not being a pessimistic Jets fan, it just to me makes more sense knowing both teams.
Could be a letdown game for the Jets. I'm with you. They got their win. Once they keep their opening score streak going, like they can just cruise.
I mean, you want to talk about the rest of the head game. Coaching. Adam Gase, offensive genius, 8 straight games with a score. So stick that pipe in your smoke. Stick that in your pipe and smoke it. Whatever. Mark, you're up next. Snake.
I'm up again. That's interesting. Okay. I will go. Let's see here. I'm going to go because I want to keep eyes on Cleveland. I'm going to go with a little bit of a trash bag operation here. Cincinnati, Houston.
that's
and
the
what's
trash
not
bag
to like about
the
Bengals? Producing one of the most courageous performances we've seen under the watch of Ryan Finley. What can they do against Houston? Will they psychologically be able to match up after what happened on Monday night? Houston, to me, Deshaun Watson.
This game truly sucks.
It truly does. I don't need to sell it much more than what it is. I mean, Houston is look forward. They have GM interviews going on, coaching interviews. Figure that stuff out. Let's stop wasting the prime of Deshaun Watson's career. We've seen a few teams do this, and they've got to get out of these woods pretty quickly. And Deshaun Watson this week, it wasn't just Dwayne Haskins. He got a little tisk from the team for showing up to, I think it was his girlfriend's or something, event that she had with a bunch of Jaguars players with no masks. Like, are we, or Texans players, are we learning anything here?
I thought he was opening his own restaurant.
It was his own restaurant then, but I mean, more photos of like 18 people with no masks on. It's a weird
thing that they're allowing coaches to interview now, by the way, via Zoom. So the Texans are starting that as of today. We're taping this on Wednesday. And so if I was the Jets, for instance, might want to think about speeding up the process here.
Yeah, well, I also was like, who are these interviews names that you've heard attached to the Texans? Like, none of them are making me think, oh, God, I got to get that guy
right
on a Zoom call.
Right.
Well, but that's a very specially broken scenario where it may be someone that's going to comply with old Jack.
All right. So old Jack. So maybe there's a strategy there, Mark. When you pick a terrible game, you don't have to really pay attention to it. And that makes sense to me. But the way it sets up for the old Zeus are very rarely.
Wait, aren't I back up now?
What's that?
Aren't I up next?
No, I'm sorry, sir. You're not.
But you've been snaking this whole time, and so has Mark. I'm the middle guy, so you can never go in a row. Unless
No, I am. I'm the third guy, so I do snake.
But I was the first guy.
Right. Yes.
And I just completed a snake, 2-point snake operation there. So
this is great podcast.
I believe it goes to Greg.
All right, wait, hang on a second. Mark, Greg,
YouTube
Dan.
Viewers, just swoon.
I'm always in the middle. I'm the only one that doesn't snake, so I'm always in the middle.
Greg, Dan. Mark, Greg. Okay, go ahead. I don't know. I don't know where we got lost there, but it's over. Go ahead, Greg.
All right. I
see. Yep, I did a premature cross off of a line. We're all set now. Go ahead.
All right, I'll take the...
premature line cross. That's all it was.
I'll take the Ravens-Giants, which I thought would be a more compelling game a few weeks ago, but this Giants defense, which we've given a lot of credit to over the course of the season, for good reason, has struggled the last 2 weeks and is 19th in DVOA. So let's probably calm down about calling them a shutdown defense. They're more of a punch above their weight defense. And if you look at the way that they've lost the last 2 weeks against the Browns and the Cardinals, it's been against good, diverse running games they sort of had no answer for. And, oh, by the way, the Ravens come in as good and diverse a running game as you'll have. Maybe Daniel Jones gets healthier for this game because it would be a big-time test for him. Baltimore is just going to come after you. They did it last week. Even though their cornerbacks are hurt, they're just going to take the chance. They're going to come after you. Can you figure it out? That's kind of what Daniel Jones has struggled with. And good luck to the Ravens. This Giants team, which had seemed fun, may go into week 17 without even a chance to win this division.
Not fun enough if you're the Giants.
You forget about even when they're playing well, the offense was still not doing much.
Yep.
And now, you're in a situation where you're not going to shut down Lamar Jackson and the Ravens the way they're playing on offense right now. The last three games since Lamar came back from the COVID list, 34 points, 47 points, 40 points, all wins, of course. And the Giants in their last 5 weeks or 4 weeks coming out of their bye, 19 points, 17 points, 7 points, 6 points. This all seems trending in a certain direction here. I don't know if it's going to be 40-14 like Ravens did to the Jaguars, because like you said, the Giants are a proud defense that have been overachieving this season. So I don't think it gets that bad. But could it be 30-14? That's kind of what I see this game. Another easy win for the Ravens.
I'm with you because, I mean, you know, Jacksonville has played teams close. They haven't been, it hasn't been all blowouts. And Baltimore just whipped them. And my takeaway from watching Browns Giants was that where Cleveland had to get really creative in other games to throw defenses off and they liked their trick plays. It was the most vanilla week of football on offense that Cleveland's produced because I think they just simply weren't scared of what New York would do on offense at all. So why, if you're Baltimore, not go in and do what you do and drop bombs? I mean, they are one of the most dangerous. The AFC playoff field is insane, but Baltimore feels like, and I feel like I say this about a couple teams, they could beat anyone. They could beat anyone in the league playing this way, and I wouldn't be surprised. Good thing that I traded in my Baltimore Ravens Super Bowl pick for the Dolphins.
Well, here's the thing, though. I mean, we're all on the same page that the Ravens are hyper-dangerous right now, but they don't control their own destiny. The Dolphins, if they win out, could take their playoff spot. So the Ravens have a chance, and that would be pretty crazy that the Ravens could win their last five games, you know, kill most of the teams, have that great win over the Browns in prime time, and Lamar will be playing like a MVP, and then they're sitting at home. I don't think anybody wants, well, if you're a fan of these other wildcard teams, you're cool with that. But if you're a football fan that's just watching and you want the best playoff matchups, you want the Ravens in this game, but they only can control what they can control. And my last thought, Joe Judge was on Good Morning Football today. In fact, he came in immediately after the old Zeuser. When I did my power ranking segment, they moved me up. I usually do a 6:32, 6:35 a.m. hit, which is, you know, not great. It's, you know, setting the old alarm at 5:40 in the morning, and then you get in the shower and you get ready. But it got moved up to 6:15 with Joe Judge on the schedule. And you know what? That made a big difference. I struggled with that. And then I finished the hit, and then there's Sessler. Like, you know, who knows what's going on with Sessler? The man is seriously a vampire. He's in full texting flight already, shooting me texts about various league issues before the sun has even risen. So I don't know when Sessler went to bed or when he woke up or if he went to bed at all. Maybe fill in the gaps right here, Mark.
I have a terrible something I need to work on because I'll be active and up. Or at least just, you know, lying in bed and watching my phone like at 4 a.m. and I'll start texting people and it's like,
oh, I was fine with the text. I was up. I was just amazed that you were up. Or I shouldn't.
Well, I mean, I have, you know, we have, there's no sleeping in our house. I don't think any of us have that scenario, but our kids don't, sort of fall out of bed. They launch out of bed and they make it very clear that they are awake.
I still turn those notifications off, you know, until 7:30, you know, just in case, you know, just in case there's a Sessler or,
well, I think
or,
I texted both
or various
like
other people out there
the other day.
Yeah, sending at 5:30. I don't want that waking me up.
But my point, Joe Judge on Good Morning Football, one of the all-time "this guy gets it" quotes. "With all due respect to Christmas, let's forget about Christmas for a while and focus on the Ravens. Joe Judge gets it. .com/members. Password, G-man.
The ball coach.
Guy, he's all about ball. That's it. Jesus? Yeah. Nah, not a big deal. Ball?
Back burner.
That's my church.
You know, back burner the religious figures.
Yeah, there's no way you could, you know, possibly, like, do one job as well as you could do and hold Christmas also in high esteem, like, in different sides of your brain.
Christmas needs to be picked up like a gorilla press lamb and thrown into a dumpster so you can prove yourself.
Has to be one or the other.
All right, moving on. Now it's my pick, and I apologize for that embarrassing mishap on my end. It goes to me, and I will take Atlanta at Kansas City. Listen.
Fun game.
If I'm picking this late in the draft and I get Patrick Mahomes game, give it to me. And we keep waiting for the Chiefs to beat someone 50-30 or 50-20 or 57-6. Maybe it happens here, Atlanta. The Falcons are a pretty annoying team to watch, even if you're not a Falcons team. Like the game against Tampa last week, you're playing so well in the first half. Your defense is, speaking of, like, you know, overachieving, you know, you shut down Tom Brady in that offense. It's 17-0 at the half. And then you come out of the half and Brady goes right down the field on you. It's 17-7. But then Matt Ryan takes the Falcons right down the field. It's 24-7 midway through the third quarter. And then that's it. Atlanta said, we're now going to fold up tent on both sides of the ball. and allow Tom Brady to have his little latest celebration party. And now you, the Falcons and their fans, get to hear a bunch more about Super Bowl 51. If you don't want people like us to remind you, Falcons, of Super Bowl 51 and what happened in that game, stop doing stuff like that. What are you doing? Like, what kind of performance is that? And to complete inability to close out a game. So that's my thoughts about the Falcons and the Chiefs. I think we're at the stage with the Chiefs right now, and I know they lost Clyde Edwards-Helaire to a high ankle sprain and a hip, and it's a bad injury, but hopefully they get him back out of the bye in the playoffs. That's, to me, the only thing left for the Chiefs, because I know they're going to win either both of these games or one of these games and have the first seed and be locked in as much as they can. Just don't get hurt. Don't, Patrick Mahomes, don't twist your knee up. Let's get out of these games healthy and get into the playoffs at full strength or close to it.
I'd say get healthy, too, on the offensive line. I think they've been real banged up there, and maybe you don't notice it as much because, you know, they still are putting up, they put up 400 yards in every game except one over their last seven games. And you know, yeah, they're not blowing teams out, but they look in spurts as explosive as any football team I've ever watched. So, you know, but still, it would be nice to get, you know, their line healthy. I think that's the one thing. If you're going to get, if you're going to create mistakes for Patrick Mahomes, like the Dolphins did a couple weeks ago, they seem to get through those mistakes, the Chiefs, really well. But that's your method here. And I don't see the Falcons as a team that's going to cause a lot of chaos and havoc for Patrick Mahomes.
You wouldn't think so. I mean, as Dan mentioned, the Falcons gave up 31 points and 314 yards to Brady in one half. I mean, credit to Tom Brady for still being able to do a performance.
No
like
one's
that
thrown for as many yards as Brady did in one half on Sunday all season. So that's right. 43-year-old Tom Brady.
So what should Patrick Mahomes do? You would think they'd finally get a nice 2-score win. They would clinch home field. And in a season where almost no teams are going to rest, and you feel like you would need it this year more than ever because it's been a rough year, I wonder if Andy Reid's going to rest for 2 weeks. Is he going to rest for week 17 and get a bye? We'll see. We also saw your boy Todd Gurley get benched officially over the last 2 weeks. And I started thinking watching that game. I started thinking, is Todd Gurley done? Is there a...
Right.
It could be.
I would give like a 15% chance his career stops after this year.
Like is anyone going to pitch him as a starter next year?
Like, I think he'll get a job if he wanted it, but just... I don't know if he's definitely going to want to play for $1 million and be a backup or whatever it would take.
Right. He's set. I mean, we can't speak for the man and his passions as a professional football player, but he's set up or should be financially for life. And he's not going to get another big contract. And I don't think teams are going to be knocking down his door coming off a season. He was not great at the end of the Rams run because of the knee and the bone on bone condition in the knee. And then he's averaging about 3.5 yards a carry this year with the Falcons. He's just not the same guy anymore.
Yeah. Knocking down his door would be aggressive.
Yeah. Well, that would be. And I hope it wouldn't happen either way. Just knock or just, you know what? Call him. Call his agent, actually. Just be completely professional about this. All right. Finally, Snakes to Zeuser. I believe this is the last game. Carolina at Washington. Wow. So we did an entire draft with every single team in the league, plus all those other games on Christmas and Saturday and primetime. And a first-place team gets the last pick in the draft. That's where we're at with the Washington football team, a team that I guess we admire for their tenacity on defense, but I guess it stops there. They face the Carolina Panthers, who, you know, let's face it, since the end of September, they lose every single week just about. They find a way. We have an issue here at the quarterback position with Washington, and we talked about it on the Christmas special. Dwayne Haskins, bozo behavior, goes to a strip club without a mask on. It gets his photo taken. It becomes an issue. He's disciplined by the team. He's obviously puts him in a COVID close contact designation. Who knows? Maybe he has COVID after that night out. And you have Alex.
It's like,
Smith.
By the way, your coach had cancer. You know.
Well, there's that
compromised
too.
Individual.
Alex Smith has a leg injury. So there's a lot of indecision about who's even going to be behind center for this game. So Washington's in a tough spot, and it's because their former first round pick just seems like a knucklehead.
Well, it looks like he's on track to start, Dwayne Haskins. He did practice on Wednesday, that, you know, they don't really have a real NFL quarterback on the roster other than him. And Alex Smith is still hurt. Alex Smith was watching practice.
Is John Beck available? Like, where are we at? What else? So what I are think other options?
This is one of those, you know, we always say it's a sliding scale for talent. It's also like a circumstantial scale for yes. punishment. It, like, if they were able to punish Dwayne Haskins harder, I bet they would. But I think they realize he gives them a better chance to win than Johnny Bananas off the street, and they're trying to go win a division.
The guy from Real World Challenge? Johnny Bananas?
And so he's going to start this game. He's got to start this game, I think.
You're right, because Ron Rivera does not – I don't care. This is sourced by no one. This is just my opinion. Ron Rivera does not like Dwayne Haskins professionally, personally. He wants nothing to do with him on his team, his starting quarterback. But what's he going to do? He's in a situation where if this was different and you still had Kyle Allen and Alex Smith, he would absolutely bury Dwayne Haskins and put him so deep in the doghouse mm-hmm. that you might not ever see Dwayne Haskins again. So I'm sure it grinds Ron Rivera's gears that he has to now put this guy on the field to lead his offense. That's
I mean, and if you're the rest of the Washington offense, you know, you probably, if that's the case between he and Ron Rivera, and it certainly seems to be, they know all that. And then they've got their quarterback going out and doing absurd things during the week. I mean, this offense may not have a lot of belief in their own quarterback. So how about, you know, Derek Brown, Brian Burns, Jeremy Chin, this young Panthers, this defense? I've been talking them up all year. I think you got to go win one of these games. I mean, to your point, Dan, I think you say they have a tough time closing. And there have been some weird close games where stuff's happening at the end of the contest that's, you know, variable. But go take care of business here once. Be the berserker that I thought you would be against a team trying to win the NFC East.
Maybe better to keep losing, though. You know, this is a team that's rebuilding, get a top five pick. But you're right. I mean, they're going to.
We should mention they just fired their general manager, Marty Herney, who had one of the craziest general manager careers, where he built up the Jake Delhomme Panthers, was fired, came back into the building. And now Matt Rhule, I think, will essentially hire his own general manager. This should, you know, not a bad last pick. I think it'll go really quickly. The Panthers, if nothing else, go on longer drives than any team in the league. The Washington's defense gives up longer drives than any team in the league. That's Washington style. They just let you drive on them, and then they stop you in the red zone. So this has like a nice 2 hours, 47-minute type of vibe to it.
And I'm sorry to all you Christian McCaffrey fantasy owners. He is not practicing still. He is, according to Matt Rhule, doubtful for week 16. So you just lost him. It just, what a tough situation. Bye-bye. And if you're in the fantasy championship, despite Christian McCaffrey missing the entire season, yeah, just be happy that you're so good at fantasy sports, because what a sign that is. All right. That's it. Week 16 preview. Not bad. No Thursday Night Football mini recap. We're not going to do a Christmas night show, so don't be looking for that. Just give us a break. I mean, just let us have a couple days off. We're going to take a couple days off here, enjoy the holiday season, and then Sunday night we'll be back, and we will recap, 15 games. That should be fun. That should be fun. With the help of Nick Shook, we'll need it, and hopefully Chris Wessling. And before we sign off, Nabil, can you jump in here, Nabil? Are you on mic? Are you able?
Yes. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, buddy? First of all, I don't know. I still have to see how you do in post on the production, but so far, so good. No technical glitches filling in for Ricky. You sent a private chat in the middle of the show that I caught, and I didn't have a chance to speak on it during that conversation. This is a quote from Nabil. I actually know Whaley personally. That being Doug Whaley, the deposed GM of the Bills way back then. Do you want to elaborate on that for the audience?
I text him here and there. He's a nice guy. Gives good scouting advice.
How do you know him? Like, how did that start?
Oh, I go to the NFLPA Collegiate Bowl, and he was the head of that. And then now he was most recently the head of football operations for the XFL. So.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Nabil's a networker.
Nabil's
a mover and a shaker.
The head of football operations for the XFL. Since you're our source on the XFL, where is that league at? Because obviously Vince bailed on it again, but there was someone that tried to come in and save it.
I think The Rock bought it.
Oh, that's right.
I think they're gearing up for a 2021 launch or relaunch. Yeah, I think they're coming back next year.
All right, so Doug Whaley, yes, it did not work out with Sammy Watkins. It was a big roll of the dice. But you obviously are a football lifer, and happy holidays to you, Doug, if you're listening. And Nabil, thank you again for helping us out today.
Happy to join you guys.
All right, this is Dan Hansa signing off for Quiet Storm. The old boss, Nabil. Some guys just one name. Don't need anything else. That's him. He's Nabil. All right, anyway. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. We'll see you on Sunday. Peace.